Welcome to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil. He's Brent Smith, I'm Shane Stetsny, and man, the end of the sportsman season, Brent, World Championship weekend, it's sneaking up on us all of a sudden.
Yeah, it's just crazy how fast the season goes when you're having fun, Shane, and I mean, it's been a fast season, but a very competitive season in a lot of divisions, and it's been fun to call, fun to watch, and it's going to get dirty, I think, going into Crandon at the big house.
Well, I mean, we saw a lot of tensions boil over at Bark River. Why don't we make that our headline story? You know, the drama in Pro 4 that had all the armchair race officials commenting about it on Facebook. Round 11, CJ Greaves going for a pass on Jimmy Henderson, ends with Jimmy Henderson out in the dirt berm and into the wall. And then in round 12, Jimmy Henderson involved again. This time it was Johnny Greaves driving up the back of Jimmy's truck. Johnny was ultimately disqualified for it. A couple other penalties were given out to those drivers as well. And by the way, Henderson, CJ, Mickey Thomas separated by 8 points in that Pro 4 points battle. Why do you think it is that tensions are running so high among especially these guys in Pro 4?
Well, the way I look at it, Shane, is the level of competition has gotten a lot stronger. I mean, yeah, granted, we have the same Pro 4 guys, but they're building new trucks, getting better technology, and developing that new technology into being so fast where it's hard to compete at that level, right? I mean, back in the day, you had guys 1.2 seconds faster than everyone, but now it's like they're all within 8-tenths of a second. It's like everyone is quick, and when they get a chance to open up their elbows, it looks like they're going to do it no matter what, whoever it is. And on any given point in time, it might be fun for the fans, but we're taking out limited trucks.
That's, I think, you know, you make a good point. It's entertaining. There's viral clips of things that get shared around the internet.
Right.
But, you know, the cost, taking trucks out of races, you know, like I said, the driver's getting penalties for it. It seems counterproductive to the whole point of this enterprise, putting on off-road racing.
Yeah, I believe we just have to put our foot down, honestly. The rules are the rules. You can't cheap shot somebody. I mean, if you take somebody out, granted, you're done for the day. We don't want to do that by all means. We want to see the best racing. We want to see the best talent win that day. But if you take each other out, we're not going to see that. And it's not good for TV. It's not good for the racers. It's not good for the pocketbook, like we said. So we just need to straighten out. We just all need to get along. And if you want to not be happy when you're on the track with your worst enemy, well, outdrive them. Don't plow through them.
And it wasn't just Pro 4. You know, Kyle Greaves was on the podium after Pro 2 in round 12 and said that, you know, he had been frustrated with things that happened throughout that race. I do have a theory on this because Pro 2 specifically, that it bubbled up a couple of years ago at Bark River. And some of the same drivers were involved then as what was going on this year. ERX always tears up trucks. Usually by, you know, it's big chaotic things like what we saw in Pro 4 at ERX and the big crash between Johnny Holcher and Ricky G. Like, stuff tends to get torn up at ERX. And then Lena, it's small, cramped for full-size trucks. You tend to tear up more truck parts, body panels. You run out of room in a hurry on that racetrack. And then it's a really short turnaround always to Bark River. And I think it's just, you know, like the dog days of the season, the schedule as it's laid out, I think it just gets to a point where like little things compound. You know, a driver might run you the wrong way a little bit, but it sticks in your craw a little bit more that you have to go out and run against them again in 2 weeks. And I think, you know, it's just at the point of the year where everyone's like tired of the drama and it makes the emotions heightened. I think that's what I think is going on.
Yeah, I agree with you totally, Shane. I mean, their emotions are going to spike high at times, but you got to control that at the same time. I mean, it's end of the year, getting there. You want that championship. If you haven't got a win yet, you're looking to get that win on the season, put something in your pocket for 2027. So, hey, granted, being a racer myself, you don't want to take the guy out, but if you got to move him out of the way a little bit and race him hard, that's fine. But Yeah, you just gotta pay attention and race like you would want to be raced. And we've been taught that since we've been kids.
Did you ever have to deal with anything like what we're seeing in Pro 4 when you were in stock truck or super stock?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we had our days where we got stressed out and frustrated, right? We'd have a couple different drivers that would pick on us because we were a little younger than they were and they wanted us to earn it. And we came into super stock and it got really nasty. A couple races where we got spun out, got thrown to the back and had to work our way through. But our mentality was, when if you get spun out, you don't go back and retaliate it. You drive through, don't touch them and piss them off that way. And that's what we had to do a couple times. And you just tried to make friends with everyone on and off the track because you were there to do one thing and one thing was to win. And if you take yourself out or somebody else out, you're not going to get the job done.
You bring up a good point there. I think that, you know, not just singling out Pro 4, but when the level of competition gets to that point where those emotions do get charged up, you know, I think there's got to be a point where, as a driver, you have to recognize, like, this isn't good for my program to be racing like this. And again, I'm not just singling out Pro 4, but hopefully drivers who reach that point can find some understanding, right? Shake hands about it. Try to start with a clean slate. I don't know. I'm dipping into my Dr. Phil era a little bit here.
Yeah, and that's what you have to do sometimes. And I don't know if we can cure it all, but... You know, if people are listening to the podcast, you know, we want to see great racing. We want to see hands down a battle, but you got to clean it up. And no matter what class it is, not just Pro 4, we've seen it throughout the season where people would give a cheap shot because they got mad about what happened in the first half, and then they end up not even making the podium. And so it doesn't look good for your sponsors, your team, your family, the ones that support you. You don't want to have that bad name from fans that don't like you, right? You don't want to give them anything to talk about.
I guess to put a bow on all that, I just hope we can all get along, right?
Yeah. Everyone love everyone.
You probably won't have a circle around the campfire in Crandon with some of those guys singing Kumbaya with one another, but hey, you can hope for it.
Hey, who knows? They might be all singing, having a great time at the big house, and that's what it's all about, right? Just since we were kids, just getting to go to the big house. It ends there for the sportsmen. You want to put on one hell of a show for everyone. And like they always say, if you want to win one, you want to win it at Crandon in front of that many people. And I'm just ecstatic to be there, let alone get to watch these sportsmen drivers lay it all out and see what they can do, right? I mean, it's a horsepower track, but if you're in the points battle, especially like pro spec, I mean, it's going to get crazy. I've talked to Dylan Parsons and he's like, yeah, everybody's within a half a second. So it's like track positions, everything.
We always marvel at qualifying times for pro spec and for pro buggy that, like, you look up and down the qualifying results and you're like, holy cow, that many trucks, that many buggies were that close, you know, to be in the top qualifier. You can lay down an awesome lap and you end up qualifying seventh, but by 0.4 of a second. Speaking of Parsons, Dylan Parsons, you know, looking at some of the other headlines from Bark River, Dylan picked up his second win this season. His previous win, by the way, was at Crandon back in June. He seems to be fully back now to contending for a win every single race day. Do you agree with me?
Oh, yeah. He really does in my eyes as well. He's ready to rock every time. He's got his truck dialed in. He feels it's perfect to what he loves to drive, and like track positions, everything like we talked about. And he's just one to watch. And what he showed at Bark River, those big moments where he had a chance to make that bobble, that chance to make a mistake, he was flawless and he picked up that win. And I think he's going to be scary to watch the rest of the year for the other competitors.
Yeah, especially to be coming into form headed for Crandon, right?
Oh, yeah. He's locked and loaded, and he sounded really confident. I talked to him about my suspension today on the phone, and he was giving me some pointers and letting me know about his program and saying, you know, yeah, we're ready for Crandon, and anything could happen. And he just kept saying that word, you know, track position. Those two words just kept on coming to his head when he would talk to me, and it means a lot in any class, and you have that land rush start. So it's, hey, whoever has the biggest Gahoonies to get to turn one is going to do it.
Bark River was also notable, to me anyways, from a storytelling perspective. We had a handful of drivers on the sportsman side of things, and one on the pro side get their first win in Champ Off-Road, or first career win in most of these cases. Keegan Kemp got the first career win there in stock truck. Bryce Powers got his first win in Pro-Am side-by-side after having not the season that he wanted up to this point. Jackson Clearman, one of the rookies in sportsman side-by-side, became the eighth different winner in that class with his first win. And Quentin Mako in short course kart also got his first short course kart win after being close a couple times already this year. So, you know, even this late in the season, there's still, you know, drivers not necessarily in the championship hunt, but drivers looking to prove themselves, and everybody's still working toward getting faster every time they hit the racetrack, it seems like.
Yeah, and you, that's why you got to show up to play and be in the top five every time you go out there and race. No matter what, you have to be ready to take on anything, and that's what's so awesome about off-road racing. Anything can happen. The track changes, so I wouldn't want to be in half their shoes, but at the same time, it's that competitive level that you look forward to every weekend, and you get to do it with the best in the business.
Another big story, and we talked about ProLite after Lena because there was the meeting with Champ Off-Road and the existing ProLite drivers and teams that were interested in getting into the class. And, you know, there was rumors, and some of it substantiated to an extent, that ProLite was kind of on life support. Well, in the last week or just over a week, we've seen two drivers plan their moves into ProLite. Carson Hill, right now he's in Pro-Am side-by-side. They picked up a ProLite truck, and then just a few hours before we recorded, Leland Tice announced that, hey, he also has a ProLite truck in the shop now. So it seems like ProLite, for as scary as it was to start this year with, you know, only a literal handful of trucks, there's enough interest there that it seems like ProLite is safe for now, and there's some fun names coming into it.
Well, I hope so, Shane, because, you know, we don't want to see any class die out, especially ProLite. I love that class. We've seen as many as 25 trucks back in the past years, 15 years, but at the same time, it's going to go up and down and take its tolls, but I feel we're in the right direction now, and I'm glad we're going to try it another season. Hopefully, we can bring 10, 11, 12 trucks full-time next year, but normally at Cranon, we pick up those extra couple trucks, and I'm excited to see Carson Hill and Leland step up and give us truck count, and they're going to do well, right? I mean, Carson Hill, he was smiling ear to ear on all his social media. Like, he's excited.
Yeah, it's been fun to watch that unfold on Facebook over the last week or so.
Yeah, I can't imagine, you know? I mean, at that age, getting that opportunity, and definitely he knows how to drive, so it's going to be fun to watch him progress, and I know he's going to wear out that field next to his house.
Something else that happened in Bark River that maybe wasn't unexpected, but considering the context of it, Jeb Boodle sweeping both pro stock and pro side-by-side, that's a pretty big deal. He has a huge lead now in pro side-by-side. It's really the only comfortable lead, if you want to even call it that, in any of the pro classes. 74-point lead for Boodle in that one. And Cross Kirchmeyer had a huge lead in pro stock, but with Boodle sweeping and Kirchmeyer struggling a little bit at Bark River, that's down to 24 points with three rounds remaining. What a weekend for Boodle.
Oh, yeah. He's been dominant. I mean, just working on our truck in the shop this last week, my brother and I watching the past races at Bark River, he's like, man, that kid is so fast. He's so conservative when he needs to be. And, man, it's hard to catch him. He gets out front. It's like lights out for everybody else.
Yeah, and it's got to be a little bit unnerving for Cross Kirchmeyer, who before Bark River looked to almost be on cruise control in pro stock. I think he had something like a 45-ish point lead, and all of a sudden to have that nearly cut in half, you know, we're on alert now for Boodle to possibly take two championships in one season.
Yeah, I mean, Boodle, he's just one to watch all the time, and for him to pick up two championships, it wouldn't be no surprise to me, Shane. He's just well put together. He's got the right program. He got in the right cars at the right time, and he puts in the work in the off season, so it's no surprise to me what he's doing on the track. And I mean, it's cool to see the Van Epperen's going to start showing back up, because he reminds me of Rodney and Owen. When they're on, and it's hard to catch them.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's been a long time since someone won both pro stock and pro side-by-side championships. You got to go all the way back to last year when Owen did that. But they're going to be fun X factors in the pro side-by-side class for sure.
Oh yeah, anytime you see those two behind the wheel, it's going to be fun to watch. Owen, it was a bummer to not see him start the season because he just left last year just on top of the world in my eyes. He was so fast, and he's going to be one to watch. I don't care if it's new equipment or not. They'll figure it out fast.
Well, not only that, but you know, a driver, you know, bringing a new manufacturer into the sport with CF Moto USA, not racing for points. What else do you race for? You try to go out and win races, prove yourself.
Oh,
that
yeah.
makes them scarier than when they're points racing, in my opinion.
Yeah, and you know they're ready to go, and you know they're like all worried about gremlins and stuff, you know, starting a new program. But the level that they work at, Ronnie's right. been around his whole life. I mean, he's done nothing but 120% at anything he's done. So, I mean, just being the great guy he is and the great competitors, they're going to do well. And whatever they get into, and CF Moto, they're very lucky to have them too behind them because they're going to represent them very, very well in the future. I promise you that.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think they're going to make a splash at Crandon in the best possible way. Well, another class that we're always going to be keeping our eye on, especially the way it's played out this year, Pro Spec. It was a gauntlet for the top three in the points at Bark River. Nick Visser, Chris Van Ellis, and Avery Hemmer, they combined for just two podium finishes. That's it among those three drivers. Visser still has a 6-point lead over Van Ellis, and Hemmer's only 28 out of first and has been as tough as everybody else in that class. But I think what stood out to me, and I'm sure you will agree, is that a couple of rookies are starting to threaten to win races now. Braden Boshaw, a couple of second place finishes up there in his home at his hometown track, and then Wes Vandevort putting everybody on notice in round 12 with a crazy run to finish in third place. And that, I think I even made the comment to you right after that race during a commercial break that, you know, Wesley, the way that he drove in that race, who he was racing for position with and who he kept behind him. I said that was a veteran, a grown man race that he drove.
I know. And after what happened at ERX Motor Park, they put that truck back together. And I was like, okay, you know, they put it together right. I get that. But to have the confidence and know that it's perfect again and him to jump into that truck with limited seat time, like you said, he was driving through the field like a veteran and just making moves, making passes. He earned that podium spot. And same with Braden Boshaw. I mean, he was up front all day. Again, we'll talk about that track position, but he's won races in the past in super stock truck and dominated. And to move into Pro Spec, he's looking comfortable in front of his hometown. He did what he needed to do. And I think it's just a matter of time. We keep saying he's going to pick up a win. And I feel Crandon, if he can get a good start, you might see it at the big house.
I don't remember which day it was at Crandon in June, but remember he was running down Chris Vandenels and
yes, he was.
Battled him for the lead and then was attempting a pass and then spun out, rookie mistake, which you'll get sometimes. But we're going back to Crandon now, and he's obviously fast there. He's obviously settling into the truck a little bit. He even said on the podium, too, that he feels like the first win is close now.
Oh, yeah, and I mean, I don't know if I'm supposed to share this info, but I will anyways, but Braden was at Crandon, tested with Joey Machosik on the test day, and he was running Joey's truck for a couple laps, and Joey said he was just a rocket behind the wheel, and he got out, and he's like, my truck lands better than Joey's. So they were working together, making the trucks work better, and he just couldn't believe how much more power the Pro Light had, but yet he was hoping it was going to teach him to lay back a little bit in the Pro Spec, you know, drive it a little bit harder and more aggressive because of what you learned in the Pro Light.
Well, the other super, super tight class that we've been just enamored with watching and calling these races all year is Pro Buggy. Cole Bernlohr went up to Bark River, took care of business, maintains his points lead by 28 points. Tony Keepers and Jaden Uribe are tied for second in the points, by the way. And Uribe, his first champ off-road win came at Bark River in round 12, another first-time winner. He had won races before another series out west, but he showed a lot of emotion on the podium. You could tell that it was kind of a moment of gratification for him.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, Shane. And the biggest part is, right, he's raced out west, won races, but now he's in the Midwest winning with all the best talent that we have to offer. I mean, there's a lot of great drivers in the Pro Buggy division, and when you can win at a fast track like Bark River and stay dialed in, stay committed to the corners, it really paid off for him, and it worked out well. And he was very emotional. And wait till he comes to Crandon. I believe he still has more. I mean, Bark River's fast, Crandon's fast, and he can get that good start. he's going to be one.
I was already impressed by Jaden's season so far, just the consistency. Not a ton of podium finishes, but just kept stacking up fourth place, fifth place, sixth place, which doesn't sound impressive, but to have a run like that and not have a parts failure or get tangled up by someone else's mistake, just to consistently finish there is really impressive. And now to start to pick up that momentum when it's coming down to crunch time, only 3 points rounds left for our pros, all of a sudden that points race gets a whole lot more fun. And I know for a fact, when we were setting up this season, going back to before Wheatland, Jaden Uribe was not one of the names that we had picked as a contender in Pro Buggy. So that's our bad, I guess. We missed the boat on it, but Uribe is a contender right now this year. And like I said, 28 points out of first.
Yeah, it's going to be great to watch the rest of the season, the battle that they're going to lay out, and especially Cranon and the Burnlores and Keepers and Billy Booth, and you can just keep naming them over and over. It's going to be fun to watch. It's all going to be about that land rush start.
Well, I just want to take a moment to remind you, dear listener, that this podcast is brought to you by AMSOIL. If you love power and performance and saving money, you should be an AMSOIL preferred customer and save up to 25% on AMSOIL products and receive free shipping, exclusive promos, and more. Visit AMSOIL.com and sign up today. Well, our guest on this episode of the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by AMSOIL from Pro Buggy, fresh off a double podium weekend, is Bo Ambos. Bo, we appreciate you finding some time for us. We know it's a busy week.
It is. It's a busy week. But by Sunday night, unless a guy had issues, you know what I'm saying, it should be ready to go. Should be. Which I am.
I was going
to
say the key word there is you should be.
Yeah, you know, when you... Everyone that's been in that situation knows when you have an issue one race and then you know, you only got 2 weeks, you know, before the next one, it really puts a damper on things. Like, I think it was ERX. Yeah, it was ERX. I blew apart a power steering pump and ours mount to the gearbox and they got to be machined, and there was only 2 weeks, but you know, before the next race, and it literally came down to getting parts the day before, getting them, you know, figuring out what I need, getting a machine, and getting them in the car and getting the car loaded. I do like the Champ schedule this year, where there was only one race where there was only 2 weeks. Of course, that one had to be the one that I had the issues on, but having 3 weeks and between races is, I don't know about how anyone else is, but I appreciate it, you know, because most of our stuff for these cars come from out west. So
right.
No matter what, you got 5 days of shipping, no matter what. So yeah, we're ready to go as much as we can be. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to getting to Cranon and getting the weekend started.
So like I said, you know, Bark River, a couple podium finishes, a second place in round 12. Did that exceed your expectations for that weekend, and by how much?
For sure, man. For sure it did. You know, well, round 11, obviously Saturday, you know, getting on the podium. I did not know what had happened in front of me. I just saw cars going, you know, right, left, whatever, and I got through unscathed, and then I saw Booth peel off to the pits, and in my mind, I'm thinking, man, he must have got a flat, gotten there. I had no idea what went down there, so I kind of ended up with third, but like I said, on the podium, though, I at least put myself in the position to capitalize on other people's unfortunate misfortunes.
Come back the next day, you finish second. You know, what has to go right for you, still being a rookie, learning the car and learning the class, to put together two back-to-back really good finishes like that?
Well, what it takes is a good teammate, guy by the name of Tony Keepers. So he passed me in the cemetery turn, and it was an amazing pass. And I thought, man, how in the world did he do that? So Saturday, right before it got dark, I asked him to, which he's done it at other tracks. Not all of them, but most of them. Myself, my spotter Scotty, and Tony would take a track ride in his machine, golf cart, whatever, and he would talk about what he saw or how he does things or how the fastest line is. Not really how he does things, but pretty much how he's doing things is the fastest line. So he showed me, he's like, you know, you're not throwing it in hard enough. By the time you start rotating the car, you know, pitch the car, he was already pitched. So the irony in that is that that's how he tried to get around me on Sunday. But I, in my mind, I know the line, throw it in harder, and it blocked him. Not, I don't know who is behind me. My spotter never tells me who is behind me. Sure. He tells me gaps, distances, but I don't know the individual. He doesn't tell me unless I ask. Well, it kind of bit him in the shorts because he's going to try it again, but I had taken a better line. And now he washed up, and Meister was able to get around him. And after the race, I said, you know, Tony, was it worth it? And he had said yes, because he's in a tied points race with Jaden Uribe.
Right.
And Uribe was leading. So at that moment, you know, when I asked him that question, I'm thinking, no, it wasn't worth it. But now that he had said, you know, when he had said that, yeah, absolutely. He needed that position. He needed to close the gap to Jaden. So didn't work out for him. Unfortunately for him, unfortunately, he only lost one spot. But it's just kind of funny, you know, that, you know, my teammate, who is arguably, you know, one of the fastest pro buggy guys out there, he's assisting me in my development. And now, in this case, it prevented him from making a pass. But nothing's going to change. You know what I'm saying? If I asked him or if he asked me, whatever, he absolutely would still assist me in any way possible.
Right.
You know, teammates like we are, we just want a good race, a good hard race. You know what I'm saying? We will celebrate whoever is on the podium or wins a race or whatever. And it's pretty nice to have. It's almost like a tool in my toolbox that I can refer to when I just don't know, you know what I'm saying? I just don't know, to be honest. I just don't, you know, what am I doing? Not what am I doing right, wrong, but what are they doing right? You know what I mean? Cause I'm not doing it wrong per se, but I'm damn sure not doing it right. So having that in my back pocket is a nice tool to have.
Every time you've been on the podium, you've made a point to thank Tony and his family and Tim and Logan Christensen. I'm trying to think back. I don't think you've ever really raced as part of a team before. And you already said it, that those people have been a big part of your success and your growth so far. Just how important has it been to have that team environment?
My light buggy days, it was just, you know, me, Scotty, my wife, an occasional friend that would like to, you know, tag along on a, typically the Crandon weekends, because that's the one that everyone wants to go to. Ultimately, I quit asking people, you know, not like we needed the help, but if a guy, you know, wanted to come help, you're like, yeah, you know, yeah, come on down. Yeah. But then you realize that they're not there to help you. They're there to have a good time. And as we are, but we're there to race first, have a good time second. So being able now, being able to rely and lean on not only Tony, we have, you know, Rick Erdman and Trevor Shunk and, Crying Ryan, Wagner. It's been a blessing, you know, and it's awesome that we're able to, you know, we get along and we chop it up and we, you know, we spend the entire weekend together. Hardly any of us ever leave the pits, other than races or run into shag apart or whatever. It's almost invaluable, you know, having the knowledge and the camaraderie that we have, you know, like looking, we're going to be driving out to, obviously, to California, to Glen Helen. And we're really looking forward to that. You know, I've done it twice now with Tony. Tony and I did it. And you learn a lot about a person when you're stuck in a vehicle with them for 30 hours.
So you're getting a lot from them, obviously. But as you've grown and, you know, you're still a rookie in the class, so it's still like you're drinking from a fire hose on some level, but are you starting to be able to give more back to especially Tony? I mean, he's gotten a lot faster this year too. Is any of that just that collaboration with you?
It's not one-sided, but it is, you know, he's definitely, you know, carrying more of the weight, you know what I mean? Because it's his second full year in, and ironically, I'm right at about the position he was last year. You know, he'd be sniffing around the top three, maybe, you know, grab a podium here and there, but he wasn't a consistent threat. You know, now this year, you know, I mean, there's no question. He is clearly, you know, one of the fastest pro buggies on property. So that's kind of the trajectory that we have. And I think I'm able to do it a little quicker than Tony, only because I have Tony's help. You know, right. what he stumbled on, he is helping me not, I you know what I'm saying?
He gave you the blueprint.
Exactly right. Exactly right. So, but yeah, there's definitely a lot of you know, back and forth, and it's heavily one-sided. You know, maybe one day, maybe this year, maybe next year, you know, Tony will reach out for some advice or whatever on racing. But the dude really doesn't need it. That, you know what I'm saying? He's been a winner in the light buggy and obviously single buggy, and well, not the pro spec, but that was just, he's a buggy dork. I don't know right. What he was trying to do in a truck.
I've said you can't wash the buggy stink off you, no matter how hard you try.
Apparently not, and that's good. I'm glad, because he needed to be in a buggy. And the buggy that he bought, I had taught, it was Red, I can't think of Red's last name, but really cool dude.
Redkin, yeah.
I asked him at Crandon before Tony bought it. I said, hey, man, you know, if you want to sell this, would you at least, you know, think of me? And he said, yes, you're number two. Tony has already asked. I'm like, okay, fair enough. Hey, right. First come, first serve. And sure enough, he offered it to Tony, and Tony was very wise on snapping it up.
So I do want to go back to the start of the season. I remember talking to you at Wheatland. I don't remember the exact words you said to me, but I know that you, I don't want to say you were overwhelmed, but like I said, drinking from a fire hose a little bit at Wheatland. You said you're having a hard time finding some comfort in the car, but you've made, you know, noticeable strides every weekend. And I think Brent and I identified that even by like the first Crandon, you were already on the podium. So on paper, even you're getting faster weekend over weekend, and progress in anything is almost never linear like that. How have you been able to keep up making those big strides forward?
Well, when we spoke, and I remember talking, I don't remember, you know, I mean, verbatim, but to be honest, you know, the drive there, you know, doing the track walk, I was scared shitless, man, because I never drove the car. I wanted, that's why my hair is so long now. I told my wife, I said, I'm not cutting my hair till I drive the car. Well, I got the engine back 10 days before the first race. However, then I had to put the engine in the car, you know, Shane, for the first time, right? So it's the first time Scotty and I set the clutch up, set, you know, put everything, put it together, hook up all the water lines and fill it full of water. Okay, how do we, what, you know what I'm saying? We get that, and then we had to push it onto a trailer because there wasn't a, or into my trailer, there wasn't a stitch of wiring on it. Race down to Beyond Redline, and it was there for 7 days. So I get the car back with 3 days before the first race. We unload it, and Scott's like, well, you gonna drive it? I'm like, well, might as well. So I drove it up and down my road one time, up once, back down to the house, and then we started getting ready to load it. So literally the first time I actually ever put any time on that car was driving to Tech at Wheatland. So, you know, you got that big old jump there that, you know, I have no idea, you know, how the car is going to react, how it's, fortunately though, Elliot Watson and Mike Kirkham, the two previous owners,
yeah,
they maintained copious notes. Now, Mike Kirkham had never been to Wheatland, but Elliot Watson has, and I had his notes, so we at least had something to start from. We had a, thank goodness we had a base. We had a base that we could work from, and we kind of set it up. Well, not kind of. We set it up like he had it. Elliot Watson had it set up, and then it was. The mindset we've had is from the first race to it's going to be, the same at Crandon, is to be faster leaving the track than when we entered, whether it be practice, qualifying, or race. As long as we are faster, we've learned something. Now at Crandon, we have our first goal. We haven't really set any goals. We've had expectations. We had certain expectations, and getting on the podium one time this year, we that was an expectation. But our goal for Crandon, the expectation is the same. We want to be faster when we pull off than when we pulled on, but our goal is to qualify in the top 10. That's our goal. I think we can do it. I have confidence in our equipment. I have confidence in myself that we can. And let's say we go out on practice and we lay down some times that are top six worthy. I might change that goal to qualify in the inversion. But right now we got to
Sure.
keep it reasonable. And I think a top 10 qualifying effort is reasonable, for us at Crandon. And maybe I'm setting the goal, the bar a little low. I've never been on the full track. I've
Right.
never, I did the land rush. I hit turn one at speed really only twice because Saturday didn't count because it was muddy as could be. But on practice, we were able to hit turn one at speed. And then obviously on Sunday during the race, we were able to hit turn one at speed. But I have no idea. I have no idea where my braking points are going to be in Cowboy Corner. I have no idea. I guarantee the first couple laps, I'm probably going to be braking too early, because that's typically what you do
Better
until
early than
you see
late.
the data, and then Luke, Redline will ask me why I'm braking so early. And oh, and that, speaking of data, that is a blessing in disguise, man. Having that data, 'cause after every race at qualifying practice. Isaac from Beyond Redline coming down, he takes all my data and Luke goes over it. And man, you want to talk about information. That is nice to have. That is nice to have. And it tells you everything within reason. Like, for instance, he goes, "Hey, why did you shut your car on and off four times right in front of your pit?" And I said, "I didn't shut it off. I snubbed it that many times." Oh, no. Data doesn't lie. Data doesn't lie. And I mean, I had the data in my single buggy as well, not quite as much, but I still had brake sensors and everything in the single buggy. And I would go sit down with Luke in his office, and he'd pull it up and pull up the Jeep, whatever the map, and he'd be like, "Man, don't touch your brakes here. I can see your t What are you doing touching your brakes?" And what it was is because in the light buggy coming into Cowboy Corner, you would slightly, but you would jack your pedal a little bit. You wouldn't apply the brakes, but you would pump them, two or three times, because they're drum brakes. So when you
Yep.
hammered on them, they were right there. You know what I mean?
That's a great segue into something I wanted to ask you because I at Crandon in June, you said to Brent and me that there were things you were still unlearning from light buggy and from 1600. Where are you at in that process now? Do you feel like you're completely a pro buggy driver?
No, I do not. I mean, on paper, yes, and in looks, yes, but in actual on track motor skills, meaning, hand eye, all that, no. I'm shifting now is no, it's no. I have no issue shifting. The cutting brake is,
A work in
it's
progress.
just as important to use it to turn as it is to to straighten you out. You know what I mean? So that I haven't mastered yet, and I still have to have Scotty remind me, go wider, you know, like the barn jump turn. I need to be a car out and just send it through there and then run the cushion versus single buggy, light buggy, where you got your left wheel right up on the grass, you know what I mean? And
yep.
And China, you don't want to slide in the light buggy. Or I'm sorry, single buggy. You know, you want to carry as much momentum. I'm not saying you want to pitch the pro buggy sideways, but you want to hang it out more. So you know, by keeping my left tire by the grass going over that, it's just killing me. It's slowing me down. So to answer your question, no, I do not feel that I'm an officially a pro buggy driver as far as, you know. Like I watch videos and the replay, and I watch their, I hard to see their hands, but I watch their front tires on how they, you know, like they go into say the gravel pit at Crandon, and it's one flick to set the car, and then one continuous as they're throttling and you know, they're very minimal steering inputs in the car to when they go around the corner. Then you see me. And I probably have, four or five steering inputs in the car, which isn't, it's not, that's not fast. That's
right.
It works, but it's not fast. I need to be smoother. And that is one other thing that I haven't really wrapped my head around, how quick the steering is. And now it's one-handed. We spoke the other day on this, how quick it is, man, with one hand. You know, it's like I want to just reach up with my right hand but no, you can't because you're shifting and using the cutting brake. So I'll find myself overcorrecting, undercorrecting because I got one hand on the wheel. However, as everything else, it's getting much, much better.
Aside from the driving itself, how much of an adjustment has it been for the style of racing that's in pro buggy? It's a little bit more reliant on, I think, patience and, like we said, taking what the race gives you versus light buggy, especially in 1600 to a point you have to be a lot more aggressive. Has that been an adjustment too?
It's actually been nice. You don't need to try to, you know, stick it inside on every corner to make a pass or to get a position or whatever. It's kind of nice, especially with the group. Most of these guys, man, we're very cognizant of our wheels and A-arms hanging out front that these cars aren't made for wheel-to-wheel contact. They're just not. And if you do, your race is over. And it's a lot of money, these, you know, parts and time and effort and we have into these cars. So I think the majority of drivers, you know, if not all of them, are aware of that absolute fact that you gotta pay attention to people around you and given, you know, the give and take, that it just has to be there. It has to be there. Otherwise, it's just DNF after DNF, or, you know. You end up with a bad reputation. You know what I mean?
I really believe this, that pro buggy might be like the most pure flavor of racing among our pro classes for that reason, because you can't necessarily just muscle your way around someone or move them over. You have to be patient and set up the passes several corners in advance. I think that's what, for me anyways, makes it a like super entertaining racing to watch, especially compared to like some of what we saw in the truck classes at Bark River.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that was, it was entertaining with the trucks, no doubt. But, you know, I mean, at what point do you go, hey, man, there's only five of us. Maybe we shouldn't crash four of them.
Oh, right.
Whatever. I agree with you. I agree with the sentiment of the racing and the pro buggy. I thought the side-by-sides would be more like that as well, but nope. They bang wheels incessantly.
Yeah.
But you really don't see that in pro buggy because, you know, that the front rear suspension are designed to take the bumps and jumps and everything else. They are not designed to take a side load or a front impact. They're just not designed for it. And it doesn't take much to bend an arm, bend the tie rod. It doesn't take much at all. I mean, they're not paperweights, but they're not far from it.
So you kind of mentioned this earlier, and when we talked on the phone the other day, you mentioned it too, that you will admit, and seat time's a big factor in this, your skills are probably not at the level of Tony, Jordan Bernlohr, Meister, and the guys who've been doing it forever. How do you assess the gap right now between where you are and where they are?
Well, it's a good question. There's definitely a divide there because these guys are, you know, I mean, they're obviously, they're, if even if they're not running up front, look at Jordan on Sunday. If he wasn't dead last, he was second to dead last. But he turned the quickest lap time by a bunch. I mean, it wasn't even close. So the gap is definitely shrinking, and every race we get closer and closer. But I just got to be honest. I mean, you got guys like Tony and Meister, you know, who's I don't know how many championships he's won. You got Steiny, you know, Jordan, hell, Doe Cole in there, been doing this for a while. You know, there's a bit of a gap there. However, I think it's definitely closing, and it's closing quicker. You know, it's closing quicker than we thought it was going to be. You know what I mean? Like, I never thought we'd be fifth in points going into Crandon. Are you kidding me? We possibly a podium, maybe. Now we got three podiums. You know what? It is a banner year for our rookie. Our rookie year out, our first year out, you know, our first time on the track with it. So, it's been a heck of a year. But again, I also got to rely on, you know, I mean, I relied a lot on my teammates and the notes that Mike Kirkham and Elliot Watson had left. That I cannot tell you, Shane, how important that was to help our program. You know what I mean? It was so important to have those notes. And of course, now we are doing the same thing. We every race we have everything written down just like they did. So every time this car has ever been on the track, there are since Elliott's owned it to us at Bark River, we have everything written down.
It sounds, I was going to ask, despite the gap between, you know, where you are in your development versus those guys, how have you been able to run with them? But it sounds like you're just really astute at leveraging all the resources that you do have.
Yeah, and the jump from single buggy to pro buggy is, I think it's more mental than anything, because, you know, you got like three times the horsepower, you got twice the suspension, it's way wider, but my cockpit from my pro buggy to my single buggy, it really doesn't look much different. My dash is on the left, keypad is on the right. Same thing in my light single buggy. My shifter and cutting brake, you know, are in the, you know, similar positions. So cockpit wise, nothing changed, right? But now, you know, like say at ERX, going through the rhythm in a single buggy, you know, you just keep it pinned, man, and just double and you're through. Not in a pro, nope, you don't leave it pinned in the pro buggy.
Right.
You actually, you know, you throttle and double through them. And none of the flyaways, they're all flat out, but it's still a big learning curve, you know. It's the speed because now your steering input is completely different. Obviously braking input is completely different, and that'll come with seat time. That will only get better with more and more seat time that we're able to procure. But I don't know, Shane, it's I don't like toot my own horn, you know what I'm saying, because we grind. This wasn't given to us, man. We the hours and hours in the shop and making sure every at the track, making sure every everything was as right as we knew it to be. In my opinion, that's where it starts. I think it starts in the shop. You know, like when I got the car, stripped it down to a complete bare chassis, and there's no better way to learn a vehicle than to tear it down and build it back up. And I knew I was doing that from day one because I needed to know how the car worked mechanically, versus just, you know, like buying the car. You know, there, Tony and Tim and those guys, hey, you gonna run it at Crandon? I'm like, hell no, I'm not running it at Crandon. I'm in the process of tearing it down. We will campaign it next year. I have no intentions on going out in a car that at that moment, I mean, technically it was mine. I purchased it, but it wasn't mine. It you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It wasn't my car. I wanted to build it, tear it down and rebuild it from scratch. And then it's our car. Now this is our car. Now we can go out and do the best that we can.
And that's one way that you can level the playing. I mean, I think pretty much everybody in Pro Buggy, save for maybe the Burnlore brothers who have Jesse Greaves do all their prep work, I think pretty much everybody else is doing that. So I guess that is one way that you leveled the playing field.
For sure. That absolutely helped. Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And Jordan and Cole, the arrive and drive brothers, Jesse does a good job for him. And I like him. Every winter, we always, me, Tony, a bunch of us, I think last year, like almost 30 of us, we go to Pro Kart and we have a 100-lap race.
Oh, nice.
We tried getting like Meister and, but they're scared. You know, they're scared. They know the talent that we have behind the wheel of go-karting. And because, you know, big dudes in go-karting, you know, that's common.
Right.
Yeah.
My invite must have gotten lost for that one.
Yeah. You didn't get one. I didn't get lost. Didn't get one. But we don't, it's the more the merrier. You know what I'm saying? We go over one night, we get rooms and we race 100. Now we have teams. And then we race 100 laps, and then Brian caters in some grub, and then we go to a pool hall that Tony found, and it's a blast. I wish more people would go, because it's important to spend time like that, and that's probably why Tony and I, you know, get along so much, and Steinhardt as well. We spend time with each other outside of racing, and you get to learn to know someone, you know, I mean, like really know them, you know, you spend some time, break bread, have a drink or two with them. And it's important. I think if we could do that with more guys in our class, hell, even if the other classes could.
Yeah. There are classes I'm thinking of that could probably use that time with each other.
I agree. Because now the dude in front of you or behind you, it's not, you know, whoever, it's, you know, man, I know this dude, I know him well. You know what I'm saying? We spent time together. So yeah, well now it's going to be out there. Hopefully other people, if you're interested, if you are, I'll tell you when it's going to be. Brian usually hits me up and says, hey, how about one of these three dates? And I will say, what date do you want? And then he'll give me a date, and that's the date.
Nice. Sometime in the off season.
Oh yeah, it's in wintertime. It's cold as hell. Yeah, it's typically in February. The facility there is first class. Brian's in there. Brian's a wheel man. He was on my team last year. We'd have got third, but Tony Keepers took me out. Oh. I thought we was homies, Tony. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. But it's still racing, you know. And it you know, guys, you know, I mean, I take it serious. Although I'm 240 pounds, I have no business being in a go-kart. But you know, I can block with the best of them.
Well, with Crandon coming up, the end of the Midwest swing, the end of the sportsman schedule. You know, Crandon this weekend, it is the epicenter of short course off-road racing. the spiritual home of it. You've traveled around, you've been to some of the most prestigious desert races. How does Crandon compare? Does anything else really come close to the spectacle that is Crandon World Championship weekend?
Hell no. No, and I'll give you an example. My wife and I were in Ensenada for the Baja 1000.
Sure.
And I don't remember what shirt I was wearing. I don't think it was one of mine, but this team, they were, the one guy, he's like, I think I was wearing a Crandon shirt. And he was like, have you been there? And I'm like, well, yeah, I raced there. Man, you would not believe how many racers know about Crandon, want to go to Crandon, whether to race or to spectate. It's crazy. It was actually pretty cool because my wife and I mean, we kind of felt kind of like, I would not go to celebrity, but they were like, man, you race here? You've gone in the turn one? Yes, I have. And they speak so highly of it. And the majority of them have not been there. You know what I'm saying? It's they have not, but it's almost like guys back here going, man, I really like to go to the Mint 400 or the Baja 1000. You know what I'm saying? It's like that's on the bucket list. Well, Crandon is definitely that out west. It's where everyone wants to be, you know, and it's the fastest track, it's the biggest track, it's the track with the most notoriety. And quick side note about Jason Flannery. My wife and I had some friends from England here for 3 weeks and they stayed with us. Well, I had to run something up to Tony. So I asked Graham, I said, hey, would you like to take a ride up north with me? So we went to Tony's, you know, I said, well, I'm going to take you and show you the Crandon track, you know, cause they watch it on Flow and whatnot. So as we're pulling in, I'm like, oh, the gate's open. And I thought, as we're pulling in, I see a Crandon truck coming. I'm like, uh-oh. And it was Jason. And he rolls his window down and I roll mine down. And, you know, he doesn't know me from Adam. And I said, you know, hey, Jason, you know, my name's Bo. I said, I got my friend here, Graham's from England. Do you mind if I just, you know, pull up there? And we walk down and I show him the track. You know, that's it. And he's like, well, how much time do you got? I'm like, well, we're on no time schedule. So Jason pulled around, parked. I pulled around and parked. And Jason, I didn't ask him to. He gave myself and Graham a complete tour of Under the Barn and the history of Crandon. And yeah, I was impressed. I'm like, man, that he did not have to do that. And I was very, very appreciative of that. He did. Man, I'm, you know, at this time I was just a single buggy driver. So that makes it even more, I don't want to say special, but it makes it even more cool, I guess, that you know, here's some just, I'm not a rando, but I'm definitely not a household name.
Right.
But he still, I mean, maybe 15, 20 minutes, really all it took, you know, was kind of I was very appreciative of that, of Jason doing that. Hopefully he hears this and get a little bit of because he's always heard, man, because he's got to be the bad guy. But no one wants to do that job.
That's the nature of being on that side of the hustle. It's like the guys in race control. I always try to be as friendly as I can with our race control, our officials, just because I know that most people they talk to don't want to see him.
Exactly. Not a position that I would, especially at Bark River. But let's not get bogged down in the past. But you're right. No one wants that position. But they'll no problem bitching about a call they made. But they're not willing. You know, they're not willing to help out or look at it from their point of view. You know, sitting in the blistering sun all day, and they got to make split second decisions. Yeah, no, not a job I want, not a job I'm grateful that they are there to do that. I'm happy that we have a place, place to race. And another thing I'm grateful for, I don't know Megan's last name, but Megan and Dez have, I am not computer literate, man, and I have made some mistakes, and these girls are unbelievable in their professionalism and in their kindness with me, helping me make, you know, That's just a shout out to those two. I appreciate what they've done for me this year when I have made a clerical error or whatever multiple times, and they have been so kind to me. So I do appreciate that.
Yeah, that's Megan Campbell and then Crandon's own Desiree Spaniel. And
Yep,
they
I
are
Megan
fantastic.
and yeah, Desi. I'll give them an attaboy from me because and I'm sure it's not just me, but I'm only speaking for me that they go above and beyond for me. And I'm sure they do it for everyone that is respectful to them.
Yes. I was going to say they don't do it for everybody, but everybody that's kind, yes.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm a lot of things, and kind is sometimes one of them.
With all the extra stuff added on to Crandon for this weekend with the parade and, if you're going to be in the Pro Spec Pro Buggy thing, that's 4 days that you'll be on track from practice day, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Do you have to mentally prepare any differently for a weekend that has so much going on aside from a whole bunch of racing?
100%, Shane. 100%, because it's not just, the races that we have. There's racing. I mean, in the back, there's racing all the time, and you have to stay focused on what what we can control. What we can control, let's make sure that it's as good as we can do, and be prepared. For any slight change, major change, whether it be time, early, a delay, a rain, whatever. Having a weekend that is as it's almost like a festival style
Right.
weekend that happens to have racing there. Yes, yeah, it's a whole different mindset. We're not there to party. We're not there to, well, Sunday night, I'll prove you wrong, but every other night is we're only preparing for the next day. And that's it. You don't look too far beyond that. Like I said, you can only control what you can control. So might as well do the best you can with what you can control with what's going on, because there's so much going on. That we and I'm talking even like going to tech or going, I mean, there are race trucks and cars and people everywhere, and everything has to be not planned out, but at least thought about.
With all that extra stuff at Crandon and the extra mental load to constantly be as prepared as you can be, do you still get to enjoy it for what it is? Like, do you maybe when you're at the parade, like sit back for a second, like, okay, this is really great to take part in this?
Oh, absolutely, dude. Absolutely. That's why we do it. That's why we do it. Absolutely. When it's time to be serious and focus on what we got to do, then that's what we do. But absolutely, you got to stop and smell the roses, man. And try to take, you can't take it all in, but you try to take as much in as you possibly can. And those are the memories, that the stories that are told about Crandon are rarely about racing.
Yeah.
To be honest, we're going to be there Wednesday morning, and we're not leaving till Monday morning, so 5 days. And honestly, less than an hour, give or take, maybe an hour and 10 minutes on the track. Yeah, that you have to. You have to, and you got to enjoy the hell out of it, 'cause if you don't, it's just gonna drive you crazy, man. 'Cause them days get long, and then they're hot, and then if it rains, you gotta be a special kind of stupid to love this sport.
Which says a lot about us who have been at it for a long time, right?
Yeah, man, I've been dumb for 41 years.
Couple of years ago, you won a world championship ring in 1600. What is it like to win on the biggest stage that our sport has to offer?
It, obviously special. No matter what, that it can't be taken away from you. Like, I've never won a championship. I've won races, podiums, whatever, but I've never won a championship in any of the classes. But a lot of people, more people have won championships than have won that ring. It's an incredible feeling, man. It's especially if you remember, I mean, I won it by the skin of my teeth. But skin of my teeth or a mile, a win is a win.
Now that you bring that up, I do remember the finish.
When I was racing and it was Schultz there, when he got by me coming out of Cowboy Corner, I didn't want to pass him to be world champ. I wanted to pass him to win the race.
Right.
You know, I didn't stay on him and make the pass to win the world championship. That thought never crossed my mind in the car. And then when I crossed the line, my spotter had no idea. And I was saying, man, I think I got him. And he's like, I don't know. I don't know yet. I don't know. Because he had his earmuffs on. So we didn't know until hell, I was out of the car. And it was actually Connor that walked up to me and said, hey, congratulations on the world championship. I up until then, because as you know, it was so close, it had to be, you know, damn near adjudicated, but it had to be checked and everything. So that's when I knew. But when I was chasing him back down after he passed me, I wasn't chasing him down to pass him to win the world championship. I was chasing him down to pass him to win the race. It just happened to be the world championship race.
Well, I with Crandon just a few days away, man, I hope that the momentum keeps up for you, and I hope that the world championship weekend exceeds your expectations again.
Well, I appreciate that, Shane, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk about, you know, our program and our successes and our ups and downs, and I got to throw this out there. It wouldn't be possible without Point Mortgage, man. It would not be possible. Peter Mendiola, the CEO, he is unbelievable. He came out to, and I didn't even have a car. He came out to, because they're from San Diego. Him and Yvonne came out to Glen Helen when I was there last year, helping Tony and whatnot. And they couldn't believe what they saw. And when I told them, yes, this is what I'm going to do, they jumped in with both feet. And obviously, you know, my wife being with Point Mortgage as well is just icing on the cake. But I could not do this without the support that I have legitimately from Peter and Yvonne from Point Mortgage.
I appreciate you both. Best of luck, and thanks for hanging out with us. Well, Brent, the biggest weekend of the season is approaching. You got a handful of sportsman classes that are single digits or, you know, more than three drivers, all with a legitimate shot coming into these final two rounds. It's going to be an absolute blast. Of course, bigger fields on the pro side. We're talking double-digit pro fours, well over double-digit pro twos, a couple extra pro lights I'm sure will be in the field. Pro Spec is going to have, I think, its biggest field ever. I think 17 trucks should be there for Pro Spec. It's going to be an absolute wild one. One that I do want to talk about now, though, that's different from years past. It's no longer the Pro Light versus Pro Buggy shootout. It's now Pro Spec versus Pro Buggy.
Heck yeah.
And I was looking at the lap times because I was curious. You know, obviously, Pro Lights are way faster than a Pro Buggy. Just a huge horsepower difference. I looked back at lap times from last year at Crandon, so full track layout last Labor Day. Almost identical lap times between those two. I think be a really fun mix to have what really have been probably our two favorite pro classes on the track at the same time. Non-points race, by the way, special Crandon race, but I'm going to be really entertained watching that one.
Yeah, it's going to get very, very good through that race because there's a lot of pro buggies, there's a lot of pro specs, and with those numbers and those lap times being that close, it's going to be a challenge, but it's going to be better than the Pro Light Pro Buggy, I believe. I mean, with the limited trucks being that much faster, I mean, it's great to see them change it up a little bit. And the Pro Spec guys, it's going to be fun for them to wheel through the field.
Yeah, that's just one more featured event besides just Champ Off-Road Racing going on at Crandon. Of course, you got the Ultra Fours. You got Van Prix is now coming into town for this weekend. So more than enough for an off-road gearhead like us to enjoy, not just points racing and World Championship Saturday, but so much to do, so much to see.
Yeah, they got a lot going on once again at the big house, and we wouldn't miss it for the world. It's going to be great, And like I said, those points battles are going to heat up even more, and it's going to be stressful for a lot of drivers and family and friends, but hey, that's why we do this.
That's why they call it the Big House. But with that, my friend, nothing left to do but pack our bags and head to the mecca of off-road racing, World Championship Weekend, the 57th Polaris World Championships at Crandon International Raceway. A lot of action, like we said, Thursday, pro and sportsman practice. Crandon Youth Cup Thursday for the fans who will be there to see that live. That starts at 4:30 p.m. on Thursday. Friday morning, of course, the iconic parade. Later in the afternoon, the rest of sportsman round number 13. And then Saturday, sportsman and pro, full day of racing. We crown world champions and points champions in the sportsman. All that will be live on Flow Racing Saturday at 9 a.m. sharp. You got to be there. You have to be at the Big House. That's where we'll be, and we will talk to you again from Crandon very soon.
Thanks for listening to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil.
You're not trying to have, like, the Kurt LeDuc intimidator factor.
Hell no, I ain't got no Kurt LeDuc. Are you kidding me? When I get behind these some of these pro buggy drivers, like Keepers and Meisters, man, I got, like, they're like, I got like the SpongeBob SquarePants intimidation factor.